gotten a pumpkin stuck on your head?
I can't say that I have.
Or a turkey. That's a Friends reference, by the way. I don't know. Any kind of holiday apparatus stuck on your head?
I've never seen Friends, but I know that scene. And, you know, Chloe, this is, a nod to that. I don't think I've ever had anything stuck on my head. What about you?
I don't. I've gotten stuck in sheets before, you know, like when you sleep and you just like ball yourself up and then you get stuck in the blanket. Like, I've totally gotten stuck in blankets.
Not really the same as a pumpkin.
No, not really the same. Okay. I like this cold open, but I have a bit of a problem with it. So first of all, we are talking about the episode Here Comes Trouble, season 9, episode 5, originally airing on October 25th, 2012. My problem with this is it is so obviously a fake pumpkin.
Yes, it looks so bad.
And I'm so mad at it that it's just like, why couldn't you just lean into the idea that he put a fake pumpkin on his head? That would have been the same joke. You just could have left off the bit about waiting for it to rot.
Yeah, I had a similar thought process. It doesn't look very good. And it doesn't last the whole episode because this is a warm open. I actually wrote warm pumpkin-y open. I don't know what pumpkin-y means as an adjective.
Pumpkin pie open.
Pumpkin pie open. And man, pumpkin pie is so good. Now I want pie.
You should have stopped at Laverne's
Pies. Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm busted to make it that far. This is a warm open. So the rest of the episode is Halloween. This is the final Halloween episode of the series, which makes me a little sad. But he just doesn't have it on the rest of the episode. So I think it's funny. I think it's really funny where we get the voiceover of Dwight saying, you know, as Jim and I discovered, anything to damage the pumpkin would damage my head. And like Jim just smashes this dummy with a pumpkin on its head with like a baseball bat, like super aggressively. But it kind of falls down a little bit. I feel like it's almost there, but not quite.
My greased up head went into the pumpkin, no problem, but
it won't budge.
I can't get it out. Try again.
I mean, I could try destroying the pumpkin.
No, 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 no.
But as Jim and I discovered,
no.
Any blow to the pumpkin itself could prove fatal to me.
Jim also does this incredible little like knife flip when he's going to attack Dwight to carve the pumpkin off of his head. I like stopped it and I know it's a fake knife. I totally know, but he nails it. Like he does this like cool, nice, like knife flip. And I was like, oh man, Jim, your other movie creds are kind of showing here.
<That's right.
laughs> Like you're acting a little
maybe
too cool.
Amazon Prime saw this, that guy should be Jack Ryan.
That's it. That's
this
where
is
it
what led
from.
To it.
That was the moment, the inciting
incident.
There's
a new series of that, or a new season of that coming, apparently, which I'm excited about. I really like that show.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet. I should watch it.
Oh, it's good. You...
Yeah?
This is a real sidebar now.
I mean, I'm kind of into, like, buff gym,
yeah.
Right? So
I could
do that.
Super hot after The Office. But, I mean, it was hot before, but... Buff Jim. What are we talking about? Anyways, it's a good show.
The Office.
I don't get, like, oh, that's just Jim in a different show vibe. Where John Krasinski is in a movie I recently saw in theaters and he plays a very minor role. And it's just like, why is Jim in this superhero movie? It's just funny when you see these people in different things.
I mean, I like to try and connect like the idea of someone's life evolving, like Michael C. Hall,
yes.
Right? He was in
Dexter,
but then before that he was in 6 Feet Under, and it's almost like David from 6 Feet Under evolved into Dexter somehow, you know, like I just,
or, you know, something happened to Pam and the kids and then he joined the CIA and got buff.
Exactly. I mean, I could see that happening. I could see that storyline for him.
That's what happens when you start a sports marketing company without telling your wife.
Exactly. I mean, okay, this was such a huge tangent and I'm totally keeping this in, but like,
that's what she said
with the pumpkin thing. with the whole pumpkin head thing, I wasn't even sure if it was supposed to be part of the same episode, because we got all of those clips of Dwight like walking to his car and leaving for the day. So was that a different Halloween? Was it like practice for Halloween? Maybe it was like a different day and not actually Halloween, and it was coming up on Halloween and he tried to scare Aaron, because I don't think it was supposed to be the same day, but it turning into a Halloween episode after the cold open made it feel really like jarring. Yeah,
it's
and weird,
right? That this totally jumped out at me too. And I'd love to know the story behind that, but I think it would have worked better as a cold open if the rest of the episode wasn't Halloween. And really, like, as in terms of holiday party episodes of The Office, like, a lot of the storyline could have happened without it being Halloween, right? Like, Andy could have just had his old band in on a random Thursday. So, I don't know. There's something a little disjointed about it. I totally agree.
Yeah, we had that one Halloween episode where they set up the warehouse, and that was all in the cold open. And they eventually, like, cut a lot of it, didn't they? Like,
yeah.
Or they changed the cold open or something happened. But that was, like, the only Halloween episode for a season was truncated into a cold open where they had a haunted house in the warehouse. And so, like, I'm wondering if they kind of started that idea with this whole pumpkin head thing, and then they're like, ah, let's put everybody in costume and have it actually be a Halloween episode, because I forgot it was a Halloween episode and I was just okay with it being a Halloween cold open. And I was actually happy. I was happy that it ended up being a Halloween episode because I love seeing everyone in costume. And I especially love in this episode how there are some people not in costume because they are new. And so they had no idea how into Halloween everyone gets here.
Yeah, like Jim.
Like Jim. Well, Jim just uses any excuse to not be in costume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've said it before, but I really like that part of Jim's personality and that he's so into everything else. He's into, like, you know, doing these elaborate pranks, and he'll stop at nothing for any of that. But when it comes to costumes, he's just not feeling it.
I sympathize and empathize with Jim as someone who doesn't really care about dressing up for things.
So, do you have a list of what everyone's wearing at this Halloween?
You know I do. I think it's pretty accurate. Some people are just, like, super in the background in this episode, like Phyllis and Stanley, we only see for a second. So we'll start at the top. So Pam is dressed up as Dr. Cinderella. Cece's into princesses, but they're trying to, like, make it a positive role model. So she's also an oncologist, which is nice.
I like that she picked a very specific, very high-end doctor.
Yeah, that was a nice detail. Erin is a puppy, but Pam thinks she's dressed as a dog. She was worried that would happen.
And you are a dog.
I'm a puppy. Dang it. I was worried that would happen.
It's okay.
Andy is dressed as George Michael, complete with the earring and leather jacket.
The puppy dog mistake is very much a throwback to the Andy dressing as a kitten and being mistaken as a cat.
Yeah.
Right?
Good call. I had not connected that.
I kind of thought that was a cool foil.
It's good. There's a lot of throwbacks to earlier Halloween episodes in this, including Meredith having a bag put on her head. we'll get to that. Oscar is a dinosaur, but later he jokes that he's the Electoral College. Ah, good one. Second only to the rational consumer there, Oscar.
It's very much in line with the way Oscar likes to do Halloween.
Angela is dressed as Nancy Reagan, because when the state senator comes in, he's in a Ronald Reagan mask. So a little look at their private life there, I guess.
No surprise here.
So I thought Dwight had a pig nose on, but I then looked on the internet and apparently he's supposed to be some sort of, like, aardvark comic book character from the 70s or something that I had no idea existed. But the pumpkin is gone. That's the important thing about Dwight. The pumpkin, it didn't happen. What are we talking about? Meredith is dressed as Black Widow from the Avengers.
I got to say, Meredith looks really good.
Yeah.
Like, she looks fantastic in that
costume.
Yeah,
she knows it. She's trying to, hit on some young Cornell boys later. Nellie is sexy Toby, complete with a hairpiece and, you know, a tie and a blazer.
Okay, I give up. What are you?
I'm sexy Toby.
Oh, gross. I love it.
This gets my best costume award for sure.
Toby's really into it.
Too into it. No, no.
Too into it. Stanley is... I thought he was, like, a generic Olympian, but the internet says he's dressed as Usain Bolt. And then looking at the time this episode came out, that totally makes sense. Kevin is Charlie Brown. He's just wearing a Charlie Brown t-shirt. It's, like, a very it's a very low-effort costume from Kevin. But, so I have a little headcanon about this. Remember, previous Halloween, he came as the Joker, but so did Dwight and so did Creed. And so my thought is Kevin's not trying very hard anymore because he got burned on the previous Halloween episode.
That makes sense. I like that.
And then Phyllis is dressed as a cheerleader, but super background. Like, her and Stanley you only see for a second. And then Daryl has, like, a generic, like, Western, like, it's not, he's not really dressed up as a cowboy, but it's like a Western style shirt. So again, kind of a low effort costume from Daryl there.
Did he wear that shirt to impress D'Angelo?
It may be the same shirt.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he dressed just like that. That's his, like, Old West shirt that he found. And he's like, well, I have this left over.
The dude was super into turquoise. So Pete and Clark are not dressed up. They're unaware that Halloween is a thing in this office. But neither was Creed. We have to talk about Creed because Creed looks like he murdered somebody with a chainsaw. He has, like, blood splatter on his shirt and his head and, like, his hands.
I didn't realize that everybody here dresses up every year.
Me neither. It's Halloween. That is really, really good timing.
What did Creed do?
I don't know what Creed did. I'm going to hope that it's not human, that, you know, it was, I don't know, a bicycling incident.
Okay.
Where he hit a bird. I don't know.
I like to say, I like to...
A very blood-filled
bird. I like to
pride
myself on being an expert in bicycle accidents. if you hit a bird on a bicycle, you're in trouble. But yeah, I had totally forgotten about this little gem of Creed in this. And we have another really good Creed moment a little bit later on. But I agree. I think Sexy Toby wins.
Yeah, Sexy Toby is the best costume. I love how confident Nellie is about it. And then we'll say it now. That awkward time when Toby discovers that Nellie's dressed as Sexy Toby and he leans in for a kiss. Like, I love the extended silence of that moment where Nellie doesn't even know what to say. And then at the very end, we have kind of like a closing montage of all the storylines. But like at the very end, we see Toby kind of approaching Nellie with some flowers. And then she lets down her hair out of the, you know, Sexy Toby wig. And then he's seen walking away, smashing the flowers on the wall. What do you think was up with that?
I think he realized that he was into Sexy Toby and is like, suddenly revolted by his own desire.
That's the greatest costume. I mean, I feel like that's inspired me for future Halloweens to possibly go as like sexy versions of random people. I think that would be really funny.
I'm going to go as sexy Jason Snell on Halloween.
Oh, yes. Please do that.
I was talking about baseball and Apple Script. Okay.
That you got to get a little tight shirt too, like, oh yeah, that'd be great.
So those
short shorts,
I need a giant pumpkin head. So those are the costumes, and we learned from Andy that the Halloween party is going to be that afternoon, so get your work done or throw it out by lunch.
Just a reminder, the party is right after lunch, so make sure you get all your work done before that or throw it out. Any questions?
Andy has arranged for a treat for the party, and he has brought in Here Comes Trouble. Now, it's not the group he was with. This is kind of what we learn is it's a standing group at Cornell. So this is the current members, you know, years later. I mean, how old do we think Andy is here? Like mid-30s, maybe late 30s?
According to the internet, Andy Bernard was born in 1973.
So, and this episode came out, what, in 2012?
Yep.
So he's 39.
There we go.
Yeah. So these kids are, you know, 20 years younger than him. So, yeah, so these are kids who are, you know, substantially younger than him who are now in the group. And he has brought them down from Cornell, and they're going to play a set at the party. And of course, this immediately leads to mocking.
What lab did these little clones escape from?
My Cornell a cappella group.
You were in an a cappella group?
You went to Cornell?
Yeah. Okay. Ha 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 ha. But you have no idea how lucky you are, because HCT is doing a set at our Halloween party.
Ugh, I don't want to sit through a whole concert of that.
I do.
I love the boss's interest.
Attaboy, Clark.
He wants to seem cool and relevant to them, right? He wants to seem cool and relevant to his employees as well. That's really Andy's whole struggle in this episode. But we see him trying to connect to this younger generation, and it just doesn't, I don't think it goes the way that Andy wants.
I love Clark's reaction in particular to everything that happens in this episode. He is still on that, like, being the super cheerleader for Andy train. And he says right away how I love his line about, like, I love the boss's interests. And every moment he gets, he is talking up how much he loves a cappella, how amazing he thinks it is. And I find that to be a really funny little thread throughout the entire episode. There's even a part where I think that you probably really liked. It was kind of a meta moment where you see Clark talking to the camera in his, like, talking head, and he's asking if it was, you know, yeah, a little too
have
much.
Have I ever done this?
wait, hold on. Where's the band? Because there's no way you guys are making this magic with just your mouths.
Why, am I overdoing it? No.
When they're playing later as this comment of, like, I can't believe you're making this magic with just your mouths. And then we get Cree silently saying that's what she said in the background, which is glorious.
So good.
So good.
And the camera catches that, like, yeah, straight on.
It's, yeah, another it's throwback. Perfect. I mean, this episode's got lots of nods to previous previous episodes. I mean, in fact, we've never seen Here Comes Trouble. We've heard them on the phone when Andy was trying to sweep Angela off her feet. Remember, he did, like, the speakerphone with various lines in the office, and they all sang. But this is the first time that we're seeing them, and it's the first time that we meet Broccoli Rob, who's played by Stephen Colbert, and I love the way he plays this character. He's just over the top and, like, intense and, like, takes it all very seriously. But it comes up when he's trying to talk to this younger generation that Broccoli Rob has been mischaracterizing their time in the group, including taking over the name Boner Champ, which we know from previous episodes was Andy's name in the group. Andy even has a photo, and he's wearing, like, a letter jacket, and it has Boner Champ, like, embroidered on the jacket.
I was just talking to some of the actives, and they think that you're Boner Champ.
I'm so sorry. I don't know how that could have happened.
Did you maybe tell them that, or?
I just started yapping about the old days, and I guess the wine coolers were flowing, and, you know, somehow things just got hinky.
Could you call them and just tell them the truth? Because I know it's really stupid, but it's also really, really, really important.
Will do.
And this really upsets Andy. It really, I think it makes him angry, but I think it hurts him too.
Yeah, there's a lot of Andy expectation going on in this episode. And that's a lot of the things that we've seen before happening with this character, is that he sets up these expectations for how something is going to go. And it inevitably doesn't go that way. We saw this kind of with the garden party that he had for his parents, like, waiting for their approval. We're seeing this now with the with Here Comes Trouble. He's waiting to be acknowledged and have this history with this group, and it's just not there. And like you said, we see that Broccoli Rob has kind of infiltrated the group, yeah, a little bit, and made up all of these stories that really relate to Andy, and he made it about himself. But it's almost like Broccoli Rob did that because we find out because he lives near campus, and he keeps on visiting the guys, like, 2-3 times a week, which we see as pretty excessive and probably not super appropriate when it's, you know, the idea of, like, moving on as an adult, that, like, he's still holding on and showing up with these young guys who don't seem to love that he's there either. And yeah, it's like it's a whole eye-opening situation for Andy. And I feel like he keeps getting himself into these situations where he is just incredibly disappointed because he sets up these expectations for himself that just never happen. Like, he wants these glorious moments, just like very much the same when he was getting his job back. Yeah. Like, I just want my one sweet moment of justice, whatever he was looking for. And he just, he wants these things to happen, and I can understand that. Like, my heart breaks a little bit for him, and that, like, he isn't he isn't a person who has like these wonderful things happen to him naturally. And not everyone is. Like, there's very few people that kind of happens, but it's always the people who aren't expecting it that it happens to. And yet Andy's putting out there that he's like expecting all of these things to happen, and then they never come, and he is inevitably disappointed by it. And that's a giant part of this episode, is he wants to relive his youth. He's looking for something. And we've seen that happening all season with this character, is that he's looking for something more, and he just can't seem to find it. And I guess now he's trying Cornell as a source to bring back some satisfaction to his life. I don't know.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, I feel like Andy feels like he's missing something, and he's trying all these different things, right? He thinks that getting his job back will fix it. He thinks that adopting 27 dogs will fix it. Also, what's going on with those dogs? Does he still have a bunch of them? I mean, we know Kevin's is doing well, but where are the others?
Yeah. Well, and like also getting Aaron, you know, like convincing Aaron to go out with him again. That was like something else he was reaching for that, you know, isn't turning out the way he thought. Like, once he is now dating her, he's spending all of this time essentially neglecting her, you know, like it's not, I think he's been looking for something, and every single thing that he gets that he thinks he is looking for, it ends up not being it. And he's doing a terrible job at his new job now because he's neglecting. He's doing a terrible job in his relationship with Aaron. Like, there's so much going wrong because he's looking for more.
We learned the, I don't want to talk about this, but we have to. We learned the story behind the Boner Champ name. And it's not great. So we go back to 1995, because at this point he has confronted Broccoli Rob about stealing his name. And he's like, you got to call the young guys and tell them. And then I guess he does, which is like, this is also pathetic. But he had sex with a snowman back in 1995.
Yeah, I got a call from Broccoli Rob. I guess you really are the Boner Champ.
Did he tell you how I got the name?
No.
Spring Sing, 95. Got completely ripped on Bud Dries. I had sex with a snowman. I just went at that thing. Cold would have stopped most people, but I stayed locked in, you know? Took the face off. Just seemed easier that way.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
It doesn't seem like drunk Andy makes great decisions either. Yeah. Andy is a man who is lost.
Mm-hmm.
Lost in a snowman. Stop. Lost in his job.
And Aaron knows the snowman story, apparently, we learn.
I mean, a lot about this episode is turning Aaron off in particular. Yeah. She's learning some things about Andy that, you know, she's trying to be so supportive, and it is just falling flat for her. I feel really bad for Aaron, because, like, it really ends up being Aaron in the end who tells the guys, like, do this solo for Andy. Like, he's expecting it. Like, she's the one that puts it out there and like makes sure that he's trying to get his dreams to come true a little bit here, or his like fantasies that he's making up of like this group coming here that he's going to get to do his George Michael solo, and he's dressed as George Michael.
Hey, you better do Faith. You get me?
We don't know it.
So learn it. You all go to Cornell. You're like 8 Rain Men. Just learn the friggin' song.
Look, I know it was big with the old guys, but...
Butts are for pooping. Okay, make it work. You have to, or Andy will flip out. And make it a surprise, please.
And even that, like, goes wrong, because the guys think it's Broccoli Rob solo, and he shows up on a screen as a video conference singing it. And I love the background of this guy's, like, sad apartment over in Cornell, or his house. It's just like just leather sofas and nothing else. It's so funny.
No, do not sing that. Do not.
He reminded us today of how much he means to us, and we certainly seem to mean a lot to him. So without any further ado, here's an old treble classic.
Dang, 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 dang. Oh, well, I guess it would be nice.
If I could touch your body, I know not everybody got a body like you. But I
Whoa! Twice.
Before I give my heart.
What the hell is Broccoli Rob doing here? She said you wanted to hear Faith. That's Broccoli Rob's signature song.
Oh, but I need some time off.
That's my signature song. I really didn't know that, man. I just thought you wanted to hear it.
Russell, I'm dressed like George Michael.
I thought you were Adam Lambert.
And even one of the things that stood out to me was he is thinking about moving back to Cornell because he knows that Broccoli Rob is there and he has this influence over the group. And so he's trying to, like, maybe that will make me happy. I just thought that that was a little bit of an interesting nod. If anyone knows anything about the finale, which you probably should if you're listening to the show, but if for some reason you haven't watched the finale of the show yet, I won't completely spoil it, but it definitely is a little bit of, I didn't realize how early they had planted that idea that kind of comes back a little bit in the finale. And so that stood out to me this time, and it hasn't before.
This also has to do a bunch of work to get Andy where he's going to be in really in just a couple of episodes, right? Like, Andy is searching, and soon he will be literally searching for these answers because he just doesn't know who he is or what he wants. And I think that's one reason the Broccoli Rob thing bothers him so much, because, like, one sure thing he had in his life is that he was the boner champ, right? That these glory days. And when someone else comes in and takes that from him, he takes it really personally, you know, and it really upsets him. And he makes Rob call these young guys and set the record straight. And he's mad that he sings his song and they have a confrontation over the video call. Like, when that's taken from him, he feels even more rudderless than he did before, I think.
This leads to Andy calling up his parents to possibly set up a charity or a scholarship for a cappella kids, because he's just looking a way to connect back to Cornell and make a bit of a difference, because Aaron shoots down the idea of actually moving back there. And this is where Andy finds out that his parents are broke. And that's kind of the cliffhanger that the episode is left on for Andy anyway, so that we find out that Andy is in this state of not knowing who he is. And now even, like, the rug of his family's stability is pulled out from under him.
Yeah, it's like the final, like, log in the Jenga tower, right? Like, and he's now just, like, he looks lost at the end of the episode when he tells Aaron that his parents are broke.
Against the arch of heaven,
what's wrong?
Look, she proudly
my parents are broke.
So there are a couple little other threads of plots in this episode. It was mostly about Andy, but we do have, what is it, you think, like, two other small subplots that we should touch
on? Yeah, let's talk about the pill that Dwight finds first.
Sure, sure. Dwight is joking around with Aaron and saying that he's eating a box of Jims because he has some nerds in his hands, you know, Halloween candy. Aaron finds this extremely funny and needs to excuse herself to the bathroom. And in the joke, a lot of the nerds fall all over the floor over by reception, and Dwight goes to start picking them up, and he finds a pill.
Hello, little pill. What do you do?
And it is Demacil? It makes me kind of think of the Arrested Development antidepressants.
That's Dreamacil, I think.
But I still thought of it. Right? that's what it connected for me. And so Dwight looks up what this pill does. And it's, like I said, it's basically an antidepressant. It's a mood stabilizing pill. And he thinks that this must mean that there is a psychopath amongst them. And he needs to find out who it is for the safety of the office.
Come on, Dwight.
Dumetril is licensed to treat anxiety symptoms such as panic attacks, excessive worrying, and fear. Translation, there's a madman in our midst.
Yeah, so he sets off on this mission to find who it is. And Nellie gets involved. I think she's just kind of the wrong place at the wrong time a little bit. But she tells the camera, and then of course us, that it's her pill. She struggles with anxiety. She's not embarrassed about it, but she'd rather Dwight not know.
For obvious reasons.
obvious reasons. The two of them set off on this mission to find whose pill it is. And we learn over the course of this that Dwight has anxiety and he has just so many things to take care of. He's worried all the time, but he doesn't really address it past that for now. And they interact with Daryl. It's not Daryl's. Meredith finds it's like, oh, a pill, and just takes it. It's like, Meredith, don't do that. There's a pill in the kitchen.
Well, they kind of set a trap, and it was funny that Meredith was the one.
Yeah.
Free upper.
The jig is up, psychopath. Yeah. What? Yeah.
Gotcha. Don't catch me.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Oh.
Let's see you get out of this web.
The pill is mine. Get her out. Oh. Stop bagging my head.
It's for the second time Dwight has caught Meredith in the kitchen.
So I really like how this little plot line ends, because Dwight approaches Nellie after he finds out that it's her pill. Like, she admits it, and he starts to judge her, but then he kind of thinks about it.
I want some of those pills.
Oh, well, good for you. I mean, you'll need a prescription.
Oh, no, they're not for me. They're for my cousin Mose. He's just having a tough time being wifeless and a high-pressure job and his crazy cousin Mose. Other cousin Mose.
Mm, got it. Well, you tell Mose that he's a good man, and I hope he feels better.
Which one? Mose or the real Mose?
The real Mose.
He says thank you.
And I like that he is being a little bit open to the idea that, like, maybe there's something else out there that could help because of all the stressors in his life that he's experiencing right now. And it is one of those Nellie getting integrated into the group dynamic of the office and having her kind of have a softening moment with Dwight here, and that, like, you know, she's becoming more human to him and he's realizing that he might also have some human flaws that might need some help sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it's continuing what we've talked about of humanizing Nellie in a hurry, which they're definitely doing.
Yeah. Although, I mean, at this point, I bring this up a bunch to, like, point it out, but I feel like she's kind of there. She's dressing as sexy Toby. She's going on pill hunts with Dwight. You know, like, Andy's kind of left her alone a little bit at this point after the work bus incident. I'm thinking, you know, like, even though we have just one season left and we're already, you know, a few episodes in, I feel like she's pretty much there for me now. It's like, oh, yeah, Nellie's just part of the group.
It's the pill hunting that really drew them together.
It is. It is. Once you catch a Meredith,
that's right.
you know you're part
that's
of the group.
Right. We need to talk about Jim and Pam. Jim has a meeting later in the day to talk about the new company. They're meeting with some investors, and they have apparently off camera agreed that they're going to invest a certain amount of money into the company. And we then see them, Jim and his partner and a couple of guys who are the investors out at lunch. And they're talking about, like, yeah, the space is looking really good. You know, a logo should be being done by a graphic designer. This led me to asking a question of, like, why didn't he just hire Pam to do the graphic design for the company? Like, she's good at it and has interest in it, but nope, he didn't do that either.
Well, no, didn't she say she hates graphic design? That was, like, the whole thing.
Oh,
why she left
yeah,
art school?
After the after college. Okay,
she's on the
that's
mural
right.
course.
Well, they
now.
Need a mural, like, in the office.
She's the person.
But they're talking about it, and it's like, oh, we're all good. You know, with investments, we've got a year's worth of runway. And Jim then basically volunteers to put in between $5,000 and $10,000. He should not have volunteered this after they said it was all set, but I think he feels like he needs to be all the way in. But also, and, like, I mean, don't hear what I'm not saying, but, like, that's not that much money for, like, a company for a year's worth of runway. Even 10 grand probably isn't that much.
I had the same thought as you about how much he was investing. And this is like, again, the whole premise of a lot of this is that he had pre-discussed it with Pam, because now he's not making the same mistake again of not telling her stuff. They already talked about the idea of him investing. So it was something that was already out there. The idea of how much it was seemed to have been within a range that Jim exceeded. But I agree with you. It's not a ton. But where I disagree with you is that he shouldn't have. I think he definitely should have, coming from a little bit of background knowledge in life experience of, like, if you are involved in the beginning of a company, you do end up having a little bit more leverage if you were an initial investor as opposed to an initial employee. There's like, there's a difference there. Like, even being a founder, if you invest money into it, it's more of like a more substantial stake in the company and saying, like, look, I believed in it. I put my money in there, and therefore, like, your returns will be greater. So I think he did make the right move. And yes, I agree with you. It wasn't a ton, but it did seem like he needed to do the most he could in order to appear the most serious. So I'm very much on the Jim team here, but I'm also on that team because of experience.
Yeah, and I can't really judge Jim, because like when Mike and I started Relay FM, we basically both spent our life savings starting it. So I get it, but I think it's just something about the timing and Pam's reaction that I also really sympathize with, that apparently 10 was like the top, and maybe they discussed a range, but her expectation was closer to 5.
Oh, hey, how'd it go?
Oh, man, it was great. They were great.
Did you end up investing?
I did, yeah.
How much?
Man, by the end, I guess it was about 10.
About 10?
10. It was the full 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we talked about it, though, because we had to.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Yeah.
And then it also comes out that they were already set on investment, and then he got in after that. It's, and I think understandably upsetting to her, you know, they shouldn't have agreed to the range if she wasn't comfortable with the top of the range, but she definitely takes it pretty poorly. And I think there's a lot of frustration on Pam's part that about the whole thing that comes out in this. I don't think she's just upset about the money in the latter part of this episode, but there's definitely very real tension between the two of them over this amount and how it went down.
I actually really like this plot line between them and the way it builds their tension. Because like you said, we're coming off of the initial like secrecy that they were having. And then they had the discussion and now it didn't go as well. And again, it's I also completely understand where Pam is coming from. If you don't know anything about investing in a company or working at a startup or doing any of this kind of stuff, like, that is all really scary. If it seems like you didn't have to invest, you know, your life savings, why would you? Like, you know, she is panicking about the risk that's here and not having any kind of foresight into, like, is this normal? Is this a typical thing? Did he just like put up this money to seem, you know, manly and macho in front of all the guys that were there? Like, I feel like, you know, she's not in the room. And that is also probably a source of frustration and a source of tension, and that, like, she doesn't really know what is going on. And yet, like, it's Jim's pursuing of this new career, but it's also their money. So it's like, it's probably really hard to be the person on the outside trying to figure out why these decisions were made. And sometimes they seem like they're made emotionally, and having no say in that really, besides like a spousal conversation over it. Like, I could see that being extremely frustrating and hard to trust. And it's a real life problem and real life tensions, especially over life savings, that I think couples would get themselves into in this situation. It doesn't feel manufactured to me. You know, like sometimes plot lines where couples end up fighting, it feels like they just like forced this fight of like because of, you know, a miscommunication or something, like those stupid miscommunication plots. But this isn't that. This is real tensions based on communication that happened, and then stuff that like almost can't be communicated because it's emotions and finances, and that causes a lot of strife between people.
Yeah, it's a bad mix, right? Or a volatile mix.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we leave them. I mean, they sort of argue throughout the concert in the break room or in the conference room during the party.
Which I find kind of funny.
Yeah.
They're trying to like sing a cappella to her and she's having a full on heated conversation together. And it's just, it's not ending. They can't let the a cappella go on.
It's just like 19-year-old holds her hand and sings to her.
They were done with the investing and then you volunteered $10,000?
No, I had to. I needed to look like a team player, ma'am.
So you invested $10,000 to look like a team player?
And I'll be your crying shoulder.
No, what is that? I'll be
And they're arguing later at reception, hanging out with some people.
But using the Monster Mash as a euphemism instead.
Which Kevin doesn't understand.
Angela, it's Halloween. You have to sing Monster Mash.
Oh, you have to, Jim? You literally have to. No, I'm saying, what would happen if they didn't sing it? Would they go to jail? Would they be shot?
Okay. We'll just forget it.
No, I'm interested. I mean, I think everybody's interested in why they have to sing it.
Because it is Halloween. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to sing a concert, it's a good idea to throw that one in.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea to brush your teeth, but you have to feed your children. Send them to school. You know, all things you can't do if you just keep singing Monster Mash.
It turns out Pam really, really hates Monster Mash. I mean, like, never bring that song up in front of her. Even though Jim was making great points, like in favor of the song, Pam was like, no, hate it, stupid.
And so we kind of leave a lot of things open-ended in this episode. I mean, Jim and Pam's conflict is not resolved. Andy just gets this, I'm sure, like very shattering news that his parents are broke. And we also get a little shot of the senator and Oscar making out outside the warehouse. Like, there's a lot this left kind of unresolved here, which I think is fun and interesting.
Yeah, the Oscar tries to warn the senator about the cameras when he shows up at the party, but we find that the camera has found them making out behind the building, and Oscar sees that the camera has spotted them. So everybody knows, and Oscar knows it.
It probably won't come back to bite him.
Oh, not at all. He'll be fine. So, yeah, that's about it. We have some confirmation about Broccoli Rob singing with Trey Anastasio, which is kind of funny. I think that's a funny little reference there because that had come up before.
Just don't do the song anymore.
I'll tell you what. We'll have a sing-off for it. You pick 12 alums from any year to back you up, and I'll do the same. And I'm so confident that I'll win, I won't even warm up.
Fine, go ahead, thrash your pipes.
My pipes are primo, champ. Why don't you ask Trey Anastasio about my pipes?
I knew you would go there, you son of a bitch!
He said, and I quote, "Hey, Rob, nice pipes." That happened.
Okay.
We kind of leave everybody in a little bit of a situation. Yeah. Nobody's really happy at the end of this Halloween.
No one's a real winner in this episode.
So that brings us to the end of the final Halloween episode. So sad. But we will be back next time talking about the episode The Boat. And until then, you can go and follow us over at tall_beats on Twitter, or you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members-only bonus feed, which will soon include our trivia episode.
Yes.
And you can also join us in the conference room, our members-only Slack. All right. We will be boarding a boat, I guess, next time. Setting sail.
Oh, nailed it.
There it is.